Two. Welcome to the Mystery College Podcast. I'm Jake Zen, and today I'm with Philip Harris Smith. He is a alchemist, a hermeticist, Kabbalist, and is very proficient in the arts. Welcome.
Hiya. It's a real pleasure to be here, man.
Yeah, a pleasure to have you. So I'm really curious about some of your experience, particularly with lab alchemy and creating tinctures. I'm wondering if you have any experience or anecdotes to share about the process of making acetate or tinctures, fluid condensers, and the like.
Yeah, I started off with the plant alchemy because, to be honest, it's safer and you don't need so much equipment. So it was a good way when it comes to the alchemy to start with that. And then after a few years of making different spagyric products, that kind of culminated with a really nice method that I read about and from several sources. And I managed to sort of piece them together. And I talked to one of the chaps online about one of the final steps, a guy called Frater Helios or Chad Henshaw. And he explained one of the final steps I needed. And basically, it involves something called a magistery, where you prepare salts and essential oils. You mix them and you keep redistilling them. Then eventually, you cook off the salts into the liquid. As long as you don't burn them, the salts are kind of opened. And it's a way to put the plant salts in a really high quantity into the spagyric. So it tastes a bit nasty, to be honest with you. But it's as long as you use a reasonably good herb and not a dangerous one, so like rosemary or lavender, you know, they're not going to hurt you if you have a couple drops of those on your tongue. And they're not, you know, even if you haven't successfully made the magistery. So that was from that and learning how to cook things off, pyrolytically distill. I did move into acetates a little more. And the reason I did that was because I had a suspicion that the oils that you get from metals will help with visible manifestation of genii in a triangle of art when you do evocations. And speaking for myself, to get something to visibly appear, I often had to put a huge amount of effort in. So what I found, what I suspected, was that if you can evaporate a metal oil, and I would say that the metal is no longer present in the oil. There's no metal left in when you think of it more like I think I read once, it's like an essential oil from a plant. You know, if you get oil of rosemary or oil of lavender, there's no plant really left in that oil when you buy it from a reputable supplier. It is the essential oil of the plant without the plant matter, as far as I can tell. And it's kind of that, but with a metal, it's almost like the essential oil of a metal. And sometimes they're called the sulfur.
The sulfur.
Yeah. So these sulfurs, I found you can evaporate them in an oil burner. And if it's a planetary genie that I'm working with, I could use, for Mercury, I could use a lavender oil and then add some of the, I don't actually use Mercury because it's dangerous to change that. Let's say I was using a Venusian oil, that's copper. Mercury is too dangerous for me to work with in my home, so I don't use it. Yeah. So I make a copper acetate. I get this sulfur, this oil, out of the copper, and then when I do an evocation, I've got some rose oil in the oil evaporator, and then I add some of this other stuff to it. This oil of copper, and it really makes life a lot easier. Obviously with a lot of evocations, you, especially with bard and stuff, you're really more interested in going to the sphere, and experiencing what's going on with the genii in the sphere. But there are some situations where you do want the genii to visibly manifest, and that kind of, in my view, completes a circuit. You know, you're going to the sphere, and the sphere is coming to you. So because the genii is manifested at the physical level, it's like a circuit's being completed. And that's very initiatory, I found. So because it takes me a fair bit of work to achieve that, one of the one of the ways that I've developed to improve my chances is to produce these, well, it's for some metals at least, produce a metal oil and evaporate that in the triangle of art. And also, because a lot of the alchemy I do just involves things sitting there for months on end and ticking over. Or then I have a few days where I do some distillation and all the rest of it. So it kind of works very well with the more day-to-day hermetic work. And it also gives me a break from, you know, it gives me a change. I'm doing something else for a bit because I'm sick of a particular Bardhan exercise, and I'm going to leave it for a few days, and I'm going to do some distillation instead. And then I'm coming back to the Bardhan stuff. I'm much, much more enthusiastic again, you know.
Yeah.
So it kind of works like that. So there's an interaction between them in both practice and in effect, I would say. So hopefully does that help?
Yeah, that helps a lot. And it also makes me curious about what type of, if there's any type of alchemical spagyric process that folks could, like, if someone were to start off with basic but possible spagyric or creating a tincture, simple fluid condenser for the practice of, you know, the art of evocation or for materializing, I'm wondering where someone could begin with that.
Well, I would suggest, there's lots of stuff on how to do the basic spagyrics out there. That's a really good book. So I'm not going to just repeat to you how to do that, because there, if anyone did a quick search on Amazon or Google or whatever, they'd get a load of books. And after reading a few, they could produce a reasonable spagyric with some basic equipment. So what I would say is I think the crutch of alchemy is to keep the equipment as simple as possible, because in medieval times, although the retorts and stuff were made of copper and things like that, they didn't have vacuum distillation. They didn't have all that kind of stuff. So we should therefore, especially if we just started alchemy, we should be able to use basic equipment. So, you know, a basic cooker hob with a saucepan and some sand and a glass retort that you can order online. They usually come from China and they're reasonably priced. You just have to wait a few weeks for them to arrive. The American ones are very good, but they cost a lot, I have found. But yeah, you know, I wrote in Perseus Academy a method for the magistery. Now, that's a well-known method now, but it's towards, as far as I can tell, it's towards the upper end of the spagyric spectrum where it starts to move into what you could call alchemy. To identify an oversimplified difference, what the difference is between spagyrics and alchemy. Spagyrics is you just purify things, and alchemy is you purify and evolve them. And of course, in both situations, the operator is purified and evolved as well. So there's an interaction between the operator and the materia being worked on. So making a magistery with an oily herb like lavender or rosemary, that's become more and more well known. There's a lot of stuff on it online. I've done a fairly brief outline that's reasonably clear for Perseus Academy that people can check through as well. Yeah. Basically, you prepare the salts. You can buy the oil as long as it's properly steam distilled and not extracted by another way. You just get a good quality rosemary oil, for example, and you just kind of gently distill off without heating too much numerous times. I mean, I wouldn't say there's a set time. It's just until you know it's ready. And it just frosts up the nose of this glass retort, and then the retort clears again. Then it frosts up again. And eventually you've decided you've done it enough. You can feel you've done it enough. So after the final distillation, you cook the salts so they start to degrade, and this kind of mist rises and it forms this kind of mucus, and you have to use a wooden cocktail stick to push. I've got photos of it somewhere. You push the nose to get all this glue dropping into the receiver. And the other thing you need is a worthwhile assistant, because obviously the smell builds up and you can't tell when the distillation is going too much towards burn and you'd spoil it. So what I do is I collect it in lots of little containers, you know, clean out old jam jars or something. Yeah. And then In the past, it would have been my wife would have come and told me, no, this lot's beginning to smell too badly. And then because my nose has been kind of blasted in the lab by what I'm doing.
Oh yeah.
So my glamorous assistant would come and tell me when it was time, you know, that they're being cooked too much. And there is an art to it of not making it heat too quickly, and you know, so try and keep the heat building slowly so you don't get to that point too quickly. Mm. But there is eventually a point where it does overcook, and you're not going to, you know, you, the stuff that you collect is no good anymore. And then roughly 50-50, this kind of clear gloop that, as I say, rose up like a mist in the retort. You add that by 50-50 by volume to the liquid, which is mainly rosemary oil and alcohol, and you just leave it to sit for, I don't know, 6 months at room temperature. If you've got an incubator, you can do it 3 months. And then you've got this really strong spagyric. It's really nice. And obviously anyone that does any kind of ritual magical garden, they can load that. You know, if someone from a very ceremonial GD perspective could put a solar talisman underneath it to sit on, they could invoke planetary forces, do invoking solar hexagrams onto it, all sorts of stuff. They could do that daily. Or if they did Bardon as well, they could load it with electromagnetic fluids. You know, there's a lot of ways while it's finishing its final maturation. I mean, you could add that kind of activity to the distillation, but I would say for safety purposes, keep it simple. You know, you don't want if you're applying that kind of heat to a piece of borosilicate glass, you don't want it exploding during halfway through your solar hexagram. You know, it's not really. I'd give more emphasis to the practicalities when you're cooking the salts off, and perhaps more ritual work when it's just happily sitting there at room temperature. You know, and so you have to. When you're kind of doing interaction between the two things, you need to moderate your enthusiasm if you can. It's not easy sometimes. So that would produce a magistery, and that, in my view, is kind of at the borderline between spagyrics and alchemy. And I think that to an extent, at least, it will have evolved as well as purified. But when it comes to real alchemy, alchemy. The metals are paramount, and I remember reading a guy called Jean Dubreuil, and he pointed out in one of these vast volumes that the reason metals are so good is that he talks about the fall of man, you know, how we fell into matter. So metals, if you catch their essence, it's before the fall, and then if you can amalgamate that with us. So in alchemy, there are several points. There's like animal life, vegetable life, mineral life. And the mineral life has not fallen, unlike the animal and the vegetable, unlike biological creation.
Yeah.
So if you can mix them together in a harmonious way, you can get a rejuvenation effect. You get all sorts of things going on.
Mm.
And acetates, obviously, if you make a proper acetate, not just to buy one, chemically mass produced, and you make a living acetate, it's got the mineral and the organic in it, which allows you as a human being to interact with the mineral life as well as the animal life or the vegetable life, if you see what I mean.
Yep.
So there's all those ideas in alchemy as well, where you are mixing whole types of life, because alchemy, in alchemy, everything is alive. There's certainly an emergent monism. I mean, you know, the Grateful Dead, that old 60s band, the Deadhead, Caput Mortem. You know, the reason everything is here is because it contains Deadhead, Caput Mortem. That's what keeps us on the earth. And if you remove Caput Mortem from anything, it just disappears back into the spirit.
Mm.
So the trick, one of the tricks of alchemy, is to remove the Caput Mortem without it disappearing. Does that make sense?
Let's see.
If it doesn't, I'm sorry.
Black whose literal meaning is deadhead or worthless remains. Oh, that's why you're saying deadhead. Okay, now that I caught on to that.
Sorry, man. I try not to. I try and jump around a bit with things, and I try to. Yeah, I think one of the things you can, if you look at alchemy, one thing you can say is it's what differentiates us from other species. No other species can, however, you know, sometimes we're unable to put out fires, but we have the ability to do so. and we can make fire. No other species can do either of those things. We've never seen them do it. So, and also, it's very difficult, although other species on our planet can do problem solving, it's very difficult to show that they engage in any kind of religious or spiritual behavior. You have to really stretch to look for that. And if you look at alchemy, it's got religious behavior or religious views and control of fire. So you can distill or calcinate. So alchemy to a certain extent is a purely human activity, and it's something that no other species does. You know, and obviously a lot of people who are chemists simply see it as a pre-science discipline full of all sorts of superstition, and then chemistry came out of it, and they you know, I'm sure they can defend that very vigorously as an empirical kind of approach to things, and I respect that. But alchemy is part of Hermeticism. I mean, the Emerald Tablet, which was translated by Sir Isaac Newton. So he who gave us Newtonian mechanics was also an alchemist, and that's, you know, I think that kind of says it all really about what alchemy. Alchemy is part of the Hermetic corpus, and it has the same fundamental rules as any other aspect of Hermeticism. The application differs, and it's somewhat more secretive, and I think with good reason as well, because in the past, you know, alchemical, or shall we say, chemical knowledge certainly had the capacity and has the capacity to cause considerable harm. You know, the principles of physical chemistry have probably accounted for more human loss of life than anything else in history.
measurably.
I mean, so hopefully that's given you an
overview. Fertilizers and such that...
Oh, yeah. It's a double-edged sword, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm also curious about what are the key distinctions that you find between the animal, mineral, and vegetable kingdoms for alchemical process? I've heard it's different in complexity, but also in the whole process of it. Like, it's much more in depth as you go into animal and so on.
Yeah, the animal, there are obviously practical issues with the animal kingdom. Yeah. You know, going and getting half a cow and boiling the bits in the back garden won't go down too well. So they're practical bits. I personally have a much more pragmatic view on it. I think that, and I have to admit, I've been influenced by people like Debris stuff on this regard. And also, for example, the Green Book by Frater Heliopoulos. If you have a lot of spagyrics, they will purify you. You know, so if you make the spagyrics and you wisely choose safe herbs like rosemary, lavender, strawberry, what, you know, things that are inherently not toxic, and you have a teaspoon, you make all these spagyrics and you have a teaspoon of each one on the appropriate planetary date. After a period of time, your blood is kind of, your person is kind of, to a degree at least, purified. And what Debris, and I think in the Green Book is also outlined, what you can do then is if you safely draw some of your own blood, you can then use that for animal alchemy. And it's actually far better than going and buying a whole pig from the butchers or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's already had a lot of the work done on it by your spagyric work. So that would be the only danger, of course, is if you don't do it in a suitable way, you might exsanguinate yourself and die. So obviously you have to get someone who knows what to do to very safely draw a pint of blood out of you. And make sure that nothing untoward occurs. And then you can work with that blood and do all sorts of animal alchemy with that. And it's probably the highest quality raw material you could have. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's no need to go off and, you know, buy an animal carcass from a butcher. You can, or you can go and buy a bunch of steaks and get to work. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just in terms of being the most parsimonious of our animal alchemy, there's a safely drawn pint of blood from someone who's been taking spagyrics for a year or two is going to provide you with the utmost of all material, because it's from you and you're working on it. That's already a circuit as well. And if anyone's interested in that kind of thing, like I say, I'd recommend the books I mentioned earlier. I think Debris stuff on it's free online if you can find the PDF. And I think I'm guessing the Green Book is still available through Scarlet Imprint. But they both have some wonderful plant work and you know, some really nice expositions on using blood from yourself for the animal alchemy side of things.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd recommend. In terms of speed, the vegetable to mineral is a bit slower than the animal to mineral. But I only know that theoretically because I primarily work with the vegetable to mineral. And again, it's purely because of practical considerations, you know. I do the lab alchemy in my home, and I don't want to stink the place out because I live here, you know. Hopefully that answers your question, man.
Yeah, that does. We're getting close to the end of our time together, so I'm wondering if you have any last pieces of advice you'd want to share with anyone who may be wanting to get started with lab alchemy, or maybe
don't go overboard on the equipment. Like I say, a gas hob that can run for a couple hours safely, even if it's a sort of camping one. You get not the little individual ones because they melt. You get the slightly larger ones with the cylinder to the side. A saucepan, some sand, and a couple borosilicate retorts. Also, a steel pan so that you can calcinate things. That'll get you started. But if you make sure that anyone who's got a jam jar, you sort of steal it off them when it's empty and wash it. You know, you can keep the costs down and you can do some good stuff. And I think the most important thing is to not really care about recipes, but to look at the underlying principles and don't allow yourself. There's a lot of people who I think are deliberately confusing. Just look at some of there are some really good books. I mean, probably one of the clearest introductions to alchemy is Real Alchemy by Bartlett.
Mm.
I mean, obviously he covers a lot of ground, and so there's not as much detail in places, but that'll put you on a good footing. You just look at the concepts of mineral life, animal life, vegetable life, and then apply basic principles. And if you are a magician or you do meditation and you load energy, you will naturally find ways to dovetail that into the actual lab procedures. And that's perhaps all I can offer.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much for your time. And is there anywhere that people can access like your writings or books or other content or getting at your theme?
I'm in the middle of writing something at the moment, but I've written a few things two or three about alchemy at Perseus Academy. A good few years ago with my late wife, I did write a book about how to produce spagyrics and dovetail that with Enochian magic such that the spagyric medium replaced the shoestone as the scrying object. So you'd make for example, if you wanted to work with Enochian entities or seniors or whatever relating to Mercury, you could produce a Mercury spagyric, a plant spagyric for Mercury, lavender therefore, and you would then put it into a container and you would use that as your scrying medium, which is again a good way to amplify. I wrote that. It was called Enochian Spagyrics. It's online somewhere. I can certainly anyone wants a copy, I can give it to them. It's a little bit rough, but you'll get the gist.
Yeah, you know, sounds great. Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
All right, mate. I'll just make a cup of tea.
All right. Bye.
Bye.